This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Donna Crisp has been working as a nurse in North Carolina for more than two decades. And after all that time spent in the healthcare system, she thought she knew it inside and out. One day in 2007, she went into a North Carolina research hospital as a patient to get a routine surgery and was expecting just an overnight stay. But 3 weeks and five surgeries later, she woke up from a coma, wondering what had gone wrong. This experience set her on a 15-year quest to understand medical errors and expose how the U.S. healthcare system is designed to cover them up. Donna co-authored the book Anatomy of Medical Errors, The Patient in Room 2, to document her own experience and share her research findings. She is still a practicing nurse in Asheville, and she joins me from partner station WCQS in that same city. Donna, welcome to The State of Things.
Hey, Frank. I go by Donna Helen. I'm glad to be here.
It's good to have you here, Donna Helen. And tell us more about that incident that set you off on this journey.
Okay, well, my journey was 8 years, not 15. Eight was long enough to write that book. Just like you said, I went into the hospital hoping to come home the next morning, and things didn't go well. And when I woke up from a coma, I had no idea what had happened. And the hospital wouldn't tell me anything. I did know pretty quickly that I had almost died. Everyone thought that I would die. And when I finally got home, I couldn't move. I had to sort of reclaim my personal power, physical power in my life. And it took a while to write the book because the story wasn't finished. I had to have a home health nurse for months. I had to go back and have a major repair surgery the next year. I went to a different hospital. And it took over 2 years before I began to figure out what had happened, which was that medical errors occurred, which were never spoken of, and adverse events occurred, which were never recognized. And along the way, I became a semi-expert about all this. Not that I would have chosen this topic, but it chose me.
Well, tell us a little bit about that, because you were certainly a nurse when you went in. You knew that it was a fairly routine surgery, and obviously something had gone wrong. What was your sense of what happened just professionally as a nurse, what should have happened and what didn't? Were people, your family and others, worried that something had really gone wrong and that you weren't getting answers right then and there?
Well, I have to speak by not by direct knowledge, because I have no memory of any of those weeks. My family was very concerned. They thought I would die, and they were told bits and pieces. The first surgery was definitely an example of medical error, when the intention to use certain instruments in a laparoscopic hysterectomy were not used as they should have been. And the doctors didn't know that. And so the next day I was dying in terrible pain, and the residents who were in charge of my case had no one to oversee them. And they didn't have very good judgment. They didn't seem to have good critical thinking skills, even in sort of major ways, to say, well, what could be causing this agonizing pain? Even though if you have gastrointestinal surgery, the number one risk of death is perforation, which is what happened. My bowel was hurt in two places, and it burst open the night before I was supposed to go home the next morning. But the real problem, and I think my sisters had some awareness of this, but not until several days later, because the doctors didn't know. But on the third day, they figured it out. They finally did the right tests and figured out that my bowel was broken and toxins were spilling throughout my body. So they took me to a repair surgery, and this is where things really went bad. A student nurse anesthetist was allowed to intubate me and didn't do it correctly, and I aspirated, and that was really a turning point in my fight to live.
Well, what happened then?
Well, they, instead of going back to my room and going home the next day, which I might have done if they'd repaired, if the second surgery had gone correctly, I was taken to an intensive care unit, put into a coma on a ventilator because my lungs didn't work. They'd been ruined by the aspiration. All the barium dye had gone into my lungs. I developed acute respiratory distress syndrome, chemical burns. I became septic, and they kept taking me back to surgery to try to kill the infection in my abdominal region. And when they finally had succeeded, there was not enough left to put my stomach back together. So I spent another week and a half in the hospital after I woke up, and then I came home on a machine for a couple of months to continue draining from the surgical site.
You have described enough medical errors, it seems to me, to bring quite a successful lawsuit. Did you pursue a legal challenge?
Well, the first call I think I made from the hospital once I was awake was to an attorney. And when I got home a couple of weeks later, this attorney was sitting in my house 4 days later. I didn't particularly want to pursue litigation. I was too sick to even think that through. But it eventually became clear to me, based on what I learned and what I was told, that it was a very long shot that I would ever win a judgment. And frankly, I just wanted to know what happened. I wasn't looking for money, any kind of reward. And so I worked with an attorney for 2 years who worked pro bono with me. And the plan was to go and meet with the hospital, and they would tell me what happened. And I promised I wasn't going to sue because I never intended to. And it didn't work. I went to the meeting, and they didn't tell me anything except that everything went fine.
So you've got the situation where everything didn't go fine. You nearly died. They knew, for one thing, that they perforated your bowel. That shouldn't have happened. But at that point, you didn't know why or how. I mean, earlier, you
that's
said
right.
something about using the wrong instruments. But that's something you found much later, right? They didn't tell you this.
Well, I found it, I would say, within the first year, I knew that the graspers they had used, and interestingly, they were called atraumatic graspers. Mm-hmm. They had clamped down with too much pressure on my intestine and didn't know it. And so I did find that out. It took me a long time to find out about the aspiration in the second surgery, probably over a year before I found that out.
So
I had to look at medical records and talk to experts to help me.
And so, and this is what your book really deals with, is sort of how long it takes to find out what should be on the record. How much of this was on some kind of a record, had been recorded somewhere, and simply unavailable to you, or in a place that you, as a nurse, didn't know how to find, or as a patient, didn't know how to find it?
Well, either I was never provided the full chart, which I paid for twice, or it wasn't in there, and I can't tell you which it is. I put pieces together. I found the word aspiration in a few places, but there was nothing in the chart about the graspers not working correctly, and they were held by surgeons. It wasn't the graspers on their own, which I guess would be the case if it had been robotic surgery.
But then how did you find that out?
Well, my surgeon told me some of that. He would never tell me who held the instruments, but he did tell me eventually that when they finished the surgery, they had bruised the intestine and didn't realize it. And hematomas developed, which burst open later.
Mm. So,
I forgave him for that. That was really, mistakes happen. I mean, if he'd known about it and they'd fixed it correctly, I would have been home within a few days and I would never have written this book.
Well, part of it, too, is that you're complaining about intense pain and they're blaming it on something else, but you're riddled with infection. I would think a simple blood test would show a pretty elevated white count and could have gotten to that quickly. Did they bother to check that, or did they assume they knew the other answer and just left it at that?
You know, I don't remember reading about a test for the blood count. I know that they use carbon dioxide. They blow it into your abdominal cavity when they do some surgeries so they can see better. And when you come out of the surgery and you're recovering, you have normal pain post-op, which dissipates and goes away. And at first, I think they thought that was the reason. But, you know, pain is considered the sixth vital sign. And I think a lot of nurses would have known, gee, this isn't right. And it took them, they didn't do an x-ray until midway through the next day, and they didn't do the CT scan until late that night.
Right. As I say, the blood count would have shown, the blood test would have shown an elevated white count.
Yeah.
And would have said, hey, wait a minute, she might be right.
Exactly.
It might be something else.
Exactly. I didn't see that anywhere.
Well, so what's the lesson? Because part of your book, you certainly detail your experience, but you also look at the larger picture of medical error and the cost to all of us and the secrecy, the fact that hospitals just won't come clean, doctors won't come clean, and this is part of what keeps these things concealed and perhaps discourages attorneys like the one you talked to from taking these cases on.
Well, absolutely. And I think what was surprising to me in part was how pervasive these medical errors are. They're considered the third leading cause of death in this country. And I doubt there's a single hospital that isn't aware of that. But it's slow for these systems to change their culture. And I understand that. And every player has a part in the problem and in the potential solution.
So what are our
and
approach?
I feel like my book hopefully will help people be more aware as patients and consumers so that they can, you know, be a defensive patient.
Well, one of the things you argue for in your book is a more detailed, that informed consent should be better informed and a patient should be given more detail. Tell us more about that.
Well, I learned that informed consent, which I used to teach about, is written by the hospital for the hospital's benefit. It's sort of generic, and it can be changed. When I had my repair surgery the next year, I wanted to make an amendment to the informed consent that no students would be participating in the surgery. And the anesthesiologist got very angry at me and said I was not allowed to do that. And I had asked the nurse to go to risk management and ask them, and she came back and said, well, yes, she can make that amendment. So I crossed through something or wrote something and put my initials. So I think informed consent, I will just jump ahead to when I had a hospital meeting a couple of years after all this happened. The hospital said no mistakes were made. There were no errors. We followed standards of care perfectly. And it's just insane. But they were sticking to their script. They weren't going to say anything that would belie their probably deep understanding of what had happened.
Does this give you, at this point now that you've discovered all of this, do you think you have a good legal case to make? And is it something you'd want to do?
Well, first of all, the statute of limitations ended 3 years after this happened, so I wouldn't be able to if I did. Secondly, I have no interest in working with this topic other than helping other people be more aware of what goes on and maybe how to change it. I think that until people realize that they cannot have blind faith in their health care, things are going to happen like what happened to me, and most people aren't as relentlessly vigilant to find out the truth as I am. I mean, I've given almost a decade of my life to write this book and know about the problems. Most people don't, they don't do that, and the ones who die never do that.
You encourage consumers, of course, to become, as you are now, their own advocates and change agents. I mean, you're informing us now that we don't have to just sign that thing. We can make amendments if we want to. I guess my question is, how do we do that? Because the only time we come in contact, we're in some kind of, if not crisis, it's an impending operation or it's an impending procedure. What's the method, do you think, that all of us should do to take right now to become better informed consumers?
Well, just a quick point about the informed consent. You can't do much with that. They're not going to do surgery if you make changes that they don't like. They'll tell you to go somewhere else. But I think the first thing I would tell people to do is become aware. Know what the threats are. Know how dangerous it can be. So that you can then do things like have someone with you in the hospital. Write down every time you are given a medication, what is it? Because an average of one error per day per patient in medication administration occurs everywhere. So there are things you can do just as a consumer advocate for yourself. You can have advanced directives ready before you go into a hospital, a living will, a healthcare power of attorney. These are sort of common sense things that you can do. But really, I think the main thing I'm trying to get across is that people need to have their consciousness raised about this issue. It's the third leading cause of death in this country, and more people are learning that. So I think eventually that's going to make a difference in corporate systems having to change their policies and their culture, whether they want to or not.
You are still working as a nurse in Asheville. I wonder how you've published this book. I wonder how your colleagues in the medical profession have responded to this book.
Well, I work part-time, and the people that I know personally and professionally think it's a good book. They are glad I wrote it. They can't believe the book. They find it almost unimaginable. It doesn't come into play much where I work now. I work part-time in a state hospital with substance abuse and alcohol treatment patients. But, anything can happen that isn't appropriate wherever you work as a nurse. So I feel like I'm a very good nurse, and if I see something that needs to be changed, I speak up, and people accept that.
Speak up and write up. Donna Helen Crisp, practicing nurse and author of Medical Errors, The Patient in Room 2. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Donna spoke with us from radio station WCQS in Asheville. You can find out more about her book, Medical Errors, and research on medical errors at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton Ormond, Katie Barron, Laura Pelliser as well. Robin Copley is our technical director, Brent Wolf, WNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.